What's up, everybody? It's George Carmi from Command the Mic Podcast. I'm here with Pete Haley and Big Doug. Let's get it on. What's up, everybody? Thank you for spending your Wednesday afternoon with us. A nice little brand new start to the league new year. So here with Pete Haley from NBC Sports Washington and Washington Football Talk Podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, I got my champagne and my park hats on, ready to celebrate the new year.
100%. I'm also here by Big Doug, my co-host today. How are you doing, Doug?
Good. Thanks for having me on today.
Nah, man, it's a good day today. Definitely keeping track of all the big releases. Prior to the show, Doug and I were talking about Aaron Rodgers and all the chaos that was going on. So free agency frenzy is awesome. Really looking forward to it. Before we get into it, I want to start off with a little trivia. It's typically our fun little like way to kind of segue into the show. For those of you that don't know and don't follow Pete, he's actually a pretty good basketball player. Is that fair to say, Pete? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I cap it off at pretty good. I think that's the ceiling. But I'm playing tonight at 9 p.m. with Sam Fortier of the Washington Post. So hoping to have a nice night out there on the court.
Who's the better player between you and Sam?
I am, and that's not me being a jerk. That's just a statement of fact, and he would agree with it as well.
All right, perfect. All right, so just for fun, just kind of just break the ice for our fan base right here. So, Pete, these are popular topic on social media. Everyone talks about it. I'm kind of curious what you think. If I were to give you these four basketball players, how would you rank them all time, okay?
Got it.
Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Steph Curry. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you have them in the exact right order. I mean,
okay.
Maybe if you framed it as most influential, maybe Steph Curry would be in a different spot because of how he's changed the sport shooting-wise. But I think you did it for me, Carmi. That was really kind. I didn't have to change anything. And I never really saw MJ play except for the Wizards, but his accomplishments speak for themselves. And LeBron maybe is the most talented all around, but you can't argue with the hardware. So perfect. 1, 2, 3, 4. Appreciate it.
Gotcha. Doug, any dispute on that? What do you think, Doug?
Well, I appreciate the fact that Curry deserves more love just in the notion that he changed the way we played and look at basketball today. Kids were not jacking up threes from, 10 feet beyond the arc. Now everybody shoots threes. Even a big man's got to be able to get back and shoot the threes. And to me, that's all Steph Curry. So he doesn't belong above the other three. But I think as far as influential and changing the game, he doesn't get nearly enough credit.
I agree to that for sure. So, Doug, start off with your first question to Pete.
Pete, how did the Commanders Talk podcast start? I don't think that you guys, like the Junkies, were all friends first. I don't think you, JP, and Mitch were friends first, but show's wildly successful. How did it get started?
So, yeah, to keep it somewhat brief, but it was JP and Rich Tandler to start, and it was really JP to start on his own. I've gone back to listen to, like, the older episodes, and it was JP having guests on, but he soon got Rich involved, the late, great Rich Tandler. And it was those two and, reporters from other teams, reporters from the local beat. Eventually, Mitch joined. Probably we've done like 900 plus episodes. This is all rough accounting, but I think Mitch joined probably in the 1 to 200 range. And he provided a lot of really good insight as the guy on the field when he was holding the camera, being able to listen to huddles, having a different relationship with players than maybe strict reporters do. And then eventually down the line, 300 or 400 episodes in, I started to join as like the goofy idiot who wasn't really that smart and didn't know much about football, but I hope that has changed a bit in listeners' ears, and maybe I'm still somewhat of a goofy idiot, but I hope I know a little bit more about football. So it was us four for a while, and then sadly we lost Rich, which we think about him still all the time, of course, but
100%.
To me, JP and Mitch for a while now, and I interned for JP. I became close with him. JP and Mitch became friends at work. So you're right. It's not like the Junkies where we were childhood friends or growing up friends, but we have since become extremely tight, at times perhaps too tight with some of the bickering and the texting that goes on. But they're tremendous guys, and it's really probably the peak of my job is doing that podcast.
That's awesome, man. I love to hear that. And honestly, that's probably the best part of the entire show, right? Your camaraderie and your friendship, it kind of bleeds through the airwaves. It's actually really interesting to hear. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So, Pete, obviously we're here to talk about free agency. What are your first thoughts so far? What's your initial thoughts of the first wave of free agency for the Commanders? Do you think they're making the right decisions? Are there any big moves you're anticipating that you hope the team makes? Or what are you thinking?
I don't think I anticipated big moves. I think a signing like Andrew Wiley was about the most I was ready for. But overall, I think they've done a really nice, sound job. I think it's made sense. Every move has been sensible. They haven't gone above their means in terms of spending. They haven't signed someone and you're like, oh, I don't really get how he fits into what they need to do. Now, the players they've acquired, I don't think raise their ceiling a whole lot, but I do think it raises their floor. Having a guy like Cody Barton at linebacker, Wiley and Gates on the O-line, I think it makes them more of a competent team. Their depth, I think, is stronger. And I think the draft is where they'll look for the difference makers. 16th, you're hoping to find like a really good starter. And then in the second, third round, you're looking to find guys like a St. Juste or a Derek Forrest who can be really reliable contributors. So free agency with the money they've been able to spend or have to still spend, I think, is about finding out the edges, getting guys for Eric Bieniemy, and then the draft is where they hope to elevate the ceiling of the squad.
100%. We actually have some breaking news, actually, while we're on the show. I wonder how you guys feel about this. So, according to Ref the District, according to Diana Rossini, actually, Jacob Brissett actually signed with the Commanders. How do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, I'll start before Doug. That's a great signing, and not that I think Sam Howell is going to lose any sort of competition, but I think Brissett is some pretty reputable competition, and we'll see whether Ron has meant that Sam is going to have to earn the job, because if it is a true one versus one, then maybe Brissett can take it. I think he played pretty well for the Browns last year. His numbers won't wow you, but his efficiency and just the way he commanded that offense was pretty solid. And Howell's going to have his work cut out for him. I still think Sam will be the week one starter, but after hearing that they reached out to Chad Henne, I was expecting this backup to be more of the Cooper Rush variety. So getting Brissett is really nice for the team overall. And he showed that he can handle hanging out with Deshaun Watson or being the backup in other spots. I think he'll be a good influence on Sam Howell. And it makes that quarterback room good. And if Howell really struggles early, I think Brissett can step in and the season won't be shot by any means.
I agree. Doug, what are you thinking?
I like it. I had liked a Bridgewater kind of guy. I think Brissett, I don't have the numbers in front of me, probably
is healthier
than Bridgewater has. I had heard, like you, Pete, about Henne trying to drag him out of retirement. I like a guy like Brissett, though, because as we've seen here in Washington, the backup gets run. So it's nice to have a backup that can actually play a little bit. I don't think Chad Henne is the guy that you want him to kind of win you some ball games. I'm curious, Pete, do you think this like keeps them from drafting quarterback in a later round? Should they still be adding to the quarterback room?
I would be of the mindset that they should, because your third guy right now is Jake Fromm, who is, you know, it's fine. Your third quarterback. I mean, this team's played its third quarterback, I think, five years in a row. So
crazy.
Perhaps it matters differently here. So you could probably live with Fromm and hope that Howell and Brissett are durable enough and you don't have to reach into that emergency bag. But I think it's worth drafting a guy. Who knows? Maybe he becomes a Howell-like guy who impresses you a little bit in practice and gets a start late in the year if things haven't gone well, and then you can kind of develop him. So I think having three arms that are potential guys for your long-term future, not that Brissett is a long-term guy, but he could be here for a couple of years as that one and a half, 1A, 1B quarterback. But I think drafting a guy on day three is worth it. Find someone with a tool that you really like. Get him in the building, see if he clicks with the enemy. And, you know, if worse comes to worse, you have a guy who you can trade down the line or at least have as your next backup if Brissett moves on in a couple seasons.
Pete, you were a little closer, obviously, than we were able to get to practice and stuff. It was odd the way it worked for Howell last year. Do you believe them when they say they think he can be the guy? Because Ron didn't obviously think he could be the guy at the end of last year, or else he would have been a no-brainer to play him. So it's odd to me how quickly Ron went from kid can't play to somebody's got to go beat him. He's the preemptive number one. How did he look last year?
Yeah, you have the right angle there. It definitely is odd for this team to now be like, oh, we love Hal. Oh, my God, he's so good. And we're like, well, why didn't he play when Wentz went down first? All right, you wanted to give Taylor the chance. Okay, but then you really needed a quarterback. You went back to Wentz instead of Howell. It does feel like they are rewriting history to make their future look brighter and trying to sell Howell when they probably don't believe it all the way. I think it's a split between they do like him versus it's the best route they have in their circumstance. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the ratio would be. I don't think it's 50-50. I think they do like Howell, and you guys saw in that game, and you've seen him in North Carolina. There is plenty to be excited about. But I think if Ron really had his choice, he wouldn't be going into a make-or-break season as the head coach of the Commanders with a guy who's thrown 19 passes in the NFL. But it's the bed they're in, and they got to sleep in it, and hopefully there's no nightmares on the way.
Speaking of which, Pete, so obviously Taylor Heinicke left yesterday to go to the Atlanta Falcons. Do you think was that a bad move by Washington? Should they have kept him in-house, or do you think the surrounding noise would have been too much for Howell to take on?
I love Taylor as much as anybody. I don't think their surrounding noise aspect really should have figured into their decision.
I agree.
I don't know if it did or not, because why do you care if the fans are chanting for Heinicke? If Howell doesn't play well, it's good to have a backup that people like and can at least play competent football. They have that in Brissett, luckily, but if they had lost out on Brissett and got somebody else, then they would have been like, damn, why did we really feel so obsessed about having a backup that isn't going to threaten our starter? You need a backup who can play at least decent football, and Heinicke can do that. However, you know, the contract looked really big at first. I don't think it's nearly as big as 2 years for $20 million. I think it's a year for six or seven, and then the second year plus all those bonuses add up to the two for 20. Depending on the numbers for Brissett, I think he's a little better than Taylor, and as long as they didn't have to pay too much more, I think they actually have a better quarterback room between Howell and Brissett than they would have with Howell and Heinicke. So I really like the guy. He was so much fun to talk to and be around and was really charismatic. But I think it worked out for both parties. He gets to go back to his hometown, and the Commanders get Brissett, who, if he played last year in this exact same situation, maybe he could have gotten the team to the playoffs.
I agree to that for sure.
And if it was rumored that they were in on him for, say, $5 million a year, and the number, to your point, Pete, is probably closer to $6 million is what he actually got, would tend to make me feel like they mutually – decided to part ways, because $1 million, you can figure that out. That's not a big deal. So obviously they didn't want him back, or else they could have made that money work. Is that kind of where you're at on this thing?
Right.
And, was that because, you know, the coach dropped the bomb right on Al Gaudy's show? I mean, I don't know if that had, there was like a day before they let him go. I don't know how that affected things, but.
Yeah, you're right. You can always, you know, you don't want to kowtow too much to a backup and be like, all right, we'll listen to whatever demands you have. Here's an extra million. Not that a million's huge in the NFL, but you know, you want to have your negotiating lines. I think if they really wanted him, yes, they would have paid him that extra cash. But I think it was a both sides. Taylor maybe feeling a little disrespected. The chance to play in Atlanta. I mean, he loves his family. He takes a lot of pride in playing in front of them. Now he can do it in front of his sister and his nephew, and I think that's a pretty special chance. And also, Bieniemy's here now, and maybe Bieniemy, we saw him let go John Matsko. I mean, he's definitely got a say in some things, and he wants people who will fit his scheme. I don't know how well he thinks Heinicke would have fit in, and maybe he thinks Brissett, who's bigger, a little sturdier, maybe a little more of a pocket operator, is a better guy. So he could have had an influence too. So I think if they really wanted him back, he'd be back. They probably were like, yeah, we'd like to have him back, but we're not going to expand beyond our parameters here. And clearly they stuck to that.
Pete, I saw that you were sitting in on the Bieniemy interview. What were your first impressions of him? Were you impressed by him? Did he seem like did he command the room? What were your first impressions?
Yeah, he definitely commanded the mic for sure in that presser. He was super passionate, really impressive. If he really hasn't been hired as a head coach yet because of quote unquote poor interviewing, then I would say the poor interviewing is probably on the other side of the table and not Bieniemy. I don't see how that guy could go into an interview and do a poor job or do 15 interviews and not do well. I think he was really, really impressive. So I think he's got a really good outlook. I think his difference in style compared to Scott Turner, Scott was quieter, maybe a little more cerebral. Bieniemy seems to be more in your face. I'm going to scream at you when you screw up. And that's going to have to take some adjusting too. And I think these players, these receivers, these running backs will be able to handle that. I think Gibson and McLaurin and Samuel and Dotson are all humble guys who can respond to coaching. They're not going to storm out of a practice if a coach gets on them. So I think the personality change could be exactly what this offense needs. The presence on the field of really demanding that every detail is handled, like Eric said, he's going to be paying attention to, is exactly what you want to hear for a coach. So I'm going to be really intrigued to see what he does. Now, of course, if Howell really is trash, then Bieniemy's influence will be pretty minimal. But if he can get something out of Howell, I think he'll be able to raise all the other players and make them the best versions of himself.
You mentioned Matt Skov. Is the timing odd on that, Pete? Like, with my understanding, he was in on the meetings at the combine with offensive linemen. It's not like Eric just got here. Bieniemy's been in the job, in the role for, I think, like a month. I'm trying to do the mental gymnastics to figure out where everything kind of fits in line. But doesn't the, like, I totally get moving on from Masco if you're going to go to a different, like, blocking scheme, if you're going to do more zone concepts with the West Coast or whatever. But the timing seems odd, doesn't it?
Yes. Timing's definitely strange. And between this and then them letting Sam Mills go in the middle of training camp, there have been some interesting coaching changes that you typically don't see. There's usually periods where coaching changes happen, and you would have thought that Matsko had gotten through that time, especially when the team was putting out these graphics of here's the new QB coach, the new wide receiver coach. All right, well, the staff is set. Let's move on. My thought process, my takeaway is that Matsko has been doing his job for years and years and years, and Bieniemy and him might have clashed a little bit, not like throwing clipboards and getting pissed off at each other and tipping over tables, but Bieniemy clearly has a way of wanting to do things. And when there's a new voice in the building, then sometimes that can, maybe there are some guys who have been there who don't want to necessarily respond to that. I think Matsko was a very good coach and did a lot of really notable things with this offensive line. And he was in on the presser with Bieniemy, you know, looking behind me there, this player, that player, this front office guy, and Matsko is there. So he's clearly trying to make a good impression. But I guess in the weeks that have happened since, they've just found that their styles don't really mesh. And it's better to realize that now than in 3 months. So it is bizarre. We'll see if Bieniemy goes to a Chiefs guy or if he upgrades Travell Wharton, who's Matsko's assistant, to be the O-line coach. It's a very key hire, probably the most key hire they're going to make this offseason beyond Bieniemy. So it's not, I think, how Rivera would have liked it, but it's better to do it now than force a pairing that isn't going to get along.
So, Pete, throughout the day, we've been talking about Cole Holcomb and his loss and going on to the Steelers. Do you think they'll have a major impact on the defense? It seemed like the team liked him as a fan favorite, but he was gone for most of the year, and his team did pretty well with him in his absence. Do you think it's a pretty big loss, and do you think Barton could replace him, you know, in the position? What do you think about that? I think he might have froze.
He might have. It's interesting, George, to your point, when he went out, what, midway through the season, I said the same thing. It didn't feel like there was that big of a regression on the defense. Now, the guy they picked up from Seattle, I don't think is like some great boost, right? Like, you're not going to make an upgrade at the position, I don't think. They'll probably be looking in the draft. But, you know, with a team that runs mostly 4-2-5 defense, then, you know, it's not quite that as important, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree to that. So, like, you know, obviously we'll wait till Pete gets back, kind of touch on it. There he is right here. Perfect timing. On cue, Pete. How you doing, sir? Can you hear us?
Yeah, sorry. If that was me, that's my bad. I guess I was just given too much insight that the server had to shut down. I couldn't handle it.
Exactly right. So I don't know if you heard the question at all, but basically we're asking about Cole Holcomb, and throughout social media, you know, people kind of like, some people are disappointed in his loss. Some people think it's kind of a minimal loss because he was out for most of the year last year. In your opinion, is that something that the Commanders can overcome? Was it a big loss for Washington? Do you think they'll potentially address it in the draft, or what are your thoughts on all that?
I think between losing Holcomb and gaining Barton, they're pretty much in the same spot they were at linebacker.
Okay.
If this team relied more on the linebacker spot, I think it would have been nice to have Holcomb, Barton, and Jamin Davis. But because they play two instead of three so often, they could make it work. I still think they should try and find one more guy, so mm-hmm. it isn't Davis and Barton, and then it's, you know, John Bostic or David Mayo and Khalik Hudson. I think they need a third guy who is a tier above those backups and closer to the starters. So if something happens, or if you want to play a bigger package against a team that runs the ball, or you're in the goal line spot and you need some bigger bodies, you feel okay about that. And you don't have to jam Cam Curl in there or transition a Bobby McCain type player to a linebacker role. So Cole was a good player. It's a shame that injury happened, because I think he was playing his best football. And I think Jamin playing better was helping Cole. I think that partnership could have worked out. and it would have been nice to see them build on it. I think they were pretty good buddies in there, and Cole was well respected, but Barton has athleticism. He can do the same things I think Cole does. So whether it's the draft or there's plenty more free agents to go, I think they get one more linebacker, and that makes this group a little bit better than it was last year. But again, they don't need this group to lead the defense. They're counting on Payne and Allen, Sweat and Young to do all the work up front, so the guys behind them can be maybe of lesser caliber, but can produce like other better players around the league.
Yeah. That being said, they're not going to chase after a Bobby Wagner or anything like that, right? It's probably too expensive.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if it was a Wagner type. I think, you know, if they didn't have Barton already, then I think, all right, maybe they have this amount of money allocated to linebacker and they put it all into Bobby. But now by going Barton, maybe you split that money into Barton and somebody else. And maybe you want, you know, Barton, I think, is going to play the middle linebacker spot. Jamin will play the weak side. Maybe you want someone who can be more on the strong side, be that real big run thumper, like a Bostic, who doesn't have a lot of pass coverage chops, but better than a Bostic, younger than a Bostic, who has a little more upside. And again, that can be in the third or fourth round. I don't think they would spend top capital on it because they just did that with Jamin. Or it can be you sign someone for $2 or $3 million today or in the next couple of days, or even in May if a veteran gets cut after OTAs or something. And it linebacker, kind of like running back of the offense, where you can find guys on cheap deals who can produce for you. And I think Barton can be that, and linebacker X can be that too.
Gotcha. Doug, any questions? Go ahead.
No, I was just, he said, you mentioned running back. I was thinking Ezekiel Elliott got cut today, and I just thought in the moment that would something I would never read, but no, I mean they use two linebackers so much of the time in that 4-2-5. The fan base keeps saying over and over and over again, we need linebackers, and the coaching staff says, no, we don't, and they say it real loudly, and nobody listens. So I do think maybe a guy like Devin Bush that's out there, like a read and react, another read and react linebacker. But I was surprised to let Cole Holcomb go. He was fine and was already in the defense. I'm a little surprised the Steelers gave him, I don't know what the number, I don't think the numbers are out yet, but it's a 3-year deal.
Right.
And that's probably what Washington wasn't interested in doing. Maybe if he hadn't gotten hurt last year. But he's a mid-level linebacker that I think, you know, they probably can replace.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. Couple more questions for you, Pete. So real quick. So obviously JD McKissick, they released him with a neck injury. The past couple of years, he's been injured. Do you think Washington's content with the running back room? Do you think they're going to potentially pursue someone in free agency or maybe in the draft? Like, I know there's connections to Jerick McKinnon and Chiefs. I'd love to have him come over here. Do you think they're going to pursue the veteran option, the running back option? Have you heard anything? Like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good transition from linebacker to running back. Like, there are many linebackers available. You can get a McKinnon. You could get, I mean, Rashad Penny signed with the Eagles either yesterday or the day before for really cheap, and he's super injury prone, but my God, when he's healthy, he's awesome. So I think there's that McKinnon is a very good connection. He's got the Bieniemy ties. His last name begins with MCKI, just like JD McKissick. So maybe you can refashion the uniform, and it's really easy that way. And I think they need that pass catcher, which is funny to say with Gibson, who is a former receiver, but they just don't seem to really want to use him in that role. They want him to be the between the tackles guy, still the outside the tackles guy and the receiver, instead of committing to him as like the true third down back. So I think they need another running back. Bieniemy being here is going to make them a little more pass oriented, I believe, but I think they do need the thumper, and I like Jonathan Williams in that role, but he strikes me as a fourth string guy, and maybe you sign someone who's like Jonathan Williams and let them battle it out. Again, I don't think this needs to be a primary focus for them. This could be a day three choice. I mean, Isaiah Pacheco, Bieniemy just drafted him, or as a part of drafting him last year, a seventh rounder who became the best running back on that offense, on a Super Bowl winning offense. So I think McKinnon, while he fits and there's a lot to like about him, I just feel like he'd be a bit of a luxury. He's coming off a really good year. He's been injury prone before, so maybe you're buying him at the peak of his market, and I don't think that's necessarily wise. So I prefer them to go for a lesser known option, a cheaper option, or find some running back in the fourth or fifth round who can just be an Alfred Morrissey, you know, comes out of nowhere and can handle a decent workload. Alfred Morris probably too rich of a thing to aim for, but you get what I'm saying.
100%. I have one more question for you, then Doug, you can ask whatever you like. We can wrap it up. So I guess, Pete, you know, we have pick 16. We got a couple offensive linemen in the draft, you know, from free agency in regard to that. Do you think any of the acquisitions that we had, Andrew Wiley and, you know, so on and so forth, Gates, are they going to preclude us from potentially getting someone at 16 at an offensive line position? Or what would you like to see happen at 16?
I would think they're so you never know who's going to fall, but I would think between Leno and Wiley, and I know Cosme, I think, is expected to play guard, but he's got tackle skills. I would think they're good at tackle for this year. I think it shoots up cornerback to probably the most likely position they're going to draft, but they've done a nice job in free agency where they don't have to feel like, okay, we have to take this position. You've got a starter in Wiley and a possible starter in Gates. I'm excited about Cameron Dantzler. This could be just complete ridiculousness, but you picked up a corner. You re-signed Danny Johnson, so you have...
I like Dantzler.
Good, thank you. You and I are on the same page there, then. So they have four or five corners that can play NFL football, two starters and a couple backups. And, you know, again, you weren't ever going to take linebacker, but you addressed that need, so you feel a little bit better about that. So if you want a corner, and there's that seems to be the position that's going to most sort of sink to 16, there might be some guys who fall down. There's some risers in Deontay Banks and a couple of the players who might become more in play at 16. Seems like corner's going to converge into there being a really good player and it also fitting your need. But maybe they go off the board and pick a tight end. I think tight end is now the second best option and perhaps even the first best if Bieniemy really emphasizes that. Of course, he had it with Kelsey. So perhaps somebody falls that he's like, this can really unlock my offense. So I'd say cornerback and tight end make the most sense. I wouldn't rule out a tackle, but by getting Wiley, paying him decent money, still having Leno for another year, that feels a bit like, all right, we can deal with that later on type of place.
Gotcha. Doug, anything to Pete?
Yeah, I was just going to say, as far as that pick at 16, maybe a trade down would be great, kind of like what they did last year, pick up some more picks. Because I think by the time you get to 16, the top two tackles will be gone. The top two corners probably be gone. I have said this. I will continue to say this. Edge rusher at 16, I think, is not out of the realm of possibility. You know, they're not. I just don't see how you pay Sweat. They don't even want to pick up the fifth-year option on Young. So saying that edge rusher in the first round is like some kind of novelty, I could maybe more foresight.
I like that you brought that up. Before the Payne extension, when it looked like they could still pay Sweat and maybe Young, I would have said edge rusher is too much, but you're right. Like if you're trying to, and this is tough again, because Rivera's in a year where he needs guys who are ready to go. Not that having another edge rusher wouldn't be helpful, but maybe a tight end who can help right away or a corner who can make that spot better would be more appealing to a coach who needs to win now. But if you're looking at the long-term construction of the team, if you get a nice edge rusher value that allows you to feel better about losing Sweat and he's cheap and you can maybe make Young work, and that frees up your salary cap space a little bit. So edge rusher, for the fans who are saying to you or just to the general world that doesn't make sense for Washington, I'd caution them about getting too comfortable about that. I don't think Ron and Jack would push for that in the top of the first round, but maybe if they trade down and they get another second round pick, then they're like, okay, now we have some more kind of blue chip pieces here. We can take an edge rusher. So that's a good call there. And I'm glad you brought it up because I kind of slept on that in my initial analysis. But as Payne has been signed to this deal, it looks like you're going to lose one, if not both of those guys. So that position, while not a pressing need today, is going to be a pretty key spot.
Forethought. Mm-hmm. Cool.
It's the odd thing. I've always said this. It's the odd thing about having your head coach also be your GM, because two jobs couldn't be more polar opposites, right? Like a head coach job is to win right now. And your point, he needs to win right now. And the GM's job is supposed to be setting the team up for the future. So how the same guy can do the same job, it's very tough. And that's why only Belichick, I guess, does it. And I'm not sure he does a good job of it.
Yeah, it's just so hard. You're right. Not only the visions, but also just like how many hours in a day are there? If Ron,
true, 100%.
I get it. You know, the offseason, of course, they're not playing right now, but if he's during the week, he's thinking about, okay, we're playing the Cowboys. Let's figure out how to beat the Cowboys. Oh man, we got Sweat on this fifth year option. How's he looking? Do we need to sign him? Oh, Sam Howell, is he developing enough? I need to look at some tape of quarterbacks. Like there's just so much going on. And I think he delegates to his coordinators well and does an okay job about that. But yeah, there's a reason why most franchises, not just in football, but in all of sports, have a GM and a head coach, and they're two different people and they do different things. And it's on the franchise to find two guys who work well together and who can blend those visions. And if you don't, and you have the one guy just doing both things, then I think that's how you arrive with an organization that's sort of crisscrossed like the Commanders, where God, Ron the coach, has got to win, but Ron the GM probably could figure out a way to build this team a little better for the long run, but he's not going to be able to because he needs to win. And it just, you go back and forth and it feels like your head is just breaking because you're going like you're watching a tennis match or something.
100%. All right. Thanks, Peter. I appreciate everything, man. Can you let the listeners know where they can find you, upcoming products you're working on or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. At Pete Haley, H-A-I-L-E-Y, N-B-C-S on Twitter. That is my most important platform. I have a lot of followers there and it makes me feel very validated. So please follow me on that. And of course, check out the Washington Football Talk pod with Mitch Tischler and JP Finley. Comes out twice a week usually. But if big stuff happens, of course, we'll join and record more as needed. So I appreciate you guys having me on, and I appreciate the many Commanders fans because while they're crazy sometimes, they're 100%. So damn excited about their team at all times, and it sure as hell beats covering a team that just doesn't have any interest. So guys like you who talk about the team, people who read or listen, like, thank you. It's really a joy to work for this group.
100%. Pete Haley got some high quality work. You know, definitely part of the rotation. All the podcasts, all the articles, Pete, I really enjoy it, man. It's awesome. So thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, dudes. I'll see you.
All right, peace out, man.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate you.
Yep. Right, have a great night, guys. Peace.